Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, it has been way too long since we caught up with Laura Salvaggio Bourbon. She is the director of the Dan Cosgrove Animal Shelter. I think it could have been as far back as 2021, I think, Laura, that we talked to you. And I know lots has happened since then. We got a lot of catching up to do. And we also want to make sure we're telling folks about a great event that's coming up that you guys have scheduled. So we will get that in play here. But first, we want to remind people that the Connecticut Office of the Healthcare Advocate wants to keep you informed about some of the most important things regarding your health insurance. They're holding a lunch and learn entitled Health Insurance 101 Pre-Certification. You know, pre-certification is a growing trend used by healthcare insurance carriers to control costs. And it can be applied to medical treatments, but also to prescription drugs and other actions ordered by your doctor. It's a pre-service review by the carrier before you can receive the benefits detailed in your health insurance policy. So you'll be able to tune into this lunch and learn to determine whether the treatment is a medical necessity versus some sort of investigational procedure. And it's critically important that you understand your rights and responsibilities under the process because it affects whether you'll receive the prescribed treatment. So on July 16th, right at noon, this lunch and learn is going to happen virtually. If you want to learn more and how to log in, you can just go to ct.gov/OHA for the Office of the Healthcare Advocate. All right, let's talk about our friends at the Cosgrove Animal Shelter. So Laura, how are things going down there? I think the last time we talked to you, you guys were in the midst of finishing up a building project, and you had some really exciting news about some Connecticut Green Bank energy initiatives that were going to be applied down there. What's been going on over the past year or two?
Yeah, so we finished our building, so it's up and running now. And we moved back in last year in February, and we opened to the public in May. So we, like I said, we're up and running. We have a beautiful new building, which includes a community room, dog and cat visiting rooms. We have different play yards for the dogs, including a splash pad for them. And then we have enrichment rooms for the cats as well so that they can sort of relax while they're rehabbing and watch kitty programs on TV, along with some other fun stuff. So the shelter is so much more comfortable now for both the people and the animals that are here. So we're really excited.
Yeah. Was there a great enhancement in capacity in the amount of animals that you're able to have under the Cosgrove Shelter's care?
So we weren't actually redoing the building to be able to take on more animals as much as it was to give the animals and the people a better experience while they were here. It was just that the shelter, even though it was about 20 years old at the time, it had some defects in the building process of what they did. And so, you know, things that we wanted to correct were like bacteria getting into the cracks in the kennels. They just didn't have any specific quarantine areas for moms with babies, for dogs or cats. So unfortunately, they were being exposed to any illnesses that were around, including the HVAC system, which all was, you know, all the same airflow throughout the building. And so we wanted each room to have its own airflow system so that we were no longer cross-contaminating with everybody. So there was a whole bunch of upgrades that we really wanted to do. And a big thing that we've seen across the state is air conditioning in dog kennels. We didn't have that either. And so it was definitely uncomfortable during the spring and summer months when the humidity levels go up. And so the dogs would definitely, you could tell by just their panting and their constant moving around how uncomfortable they were. So we just wanted to correct some things that we wanted to make more comfortable for the animals.
Yeah, and I guess you never know what kind of variety of breeds that you're going to have in dogs, cats, or other animals. And, you know, a one-size-fits-all temporary box for any breed is you know, especially under the conditions that you were describing, is rough to handle. And, you know, it makes it uncomfortable, I know, for people like you and your volunteers to see the animals uncomfortable. That's a great advancement there. Now, as you're talking with other colleagues in the area, because you've been doing this for quite a while, are you finding out that you know, you're all still sort of in the same boat in terms of the challenges with you know, capacity and more people needing to place pets? The COVID era saw a massive explosion of the acquisition of pets, and now we're hearing more and more on the news that you know, with employers essentially flipping the switch and bringing all their workforces back into the workplaces, and a lot fewer opportunities are available to work from home. Are you guys starting to see this as a you know, as a problem to address?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, in this, I've been doing this for 16 years, and the past, I'd say, 12 months to 18 months has been some of the worst I've seen. People are, so some of the issues come from people, you know, obviously going back to work and being able to go on vacation and all that stuff and no longer wanting the responsibility of their animal. But what makes it worse than what it was before is two things. One, a lot of the people that adopted didn't actually vet their animals. So we have animals that are just coming in that have never seen a vet. So, you know, they're fully matted. They're not spayed or neutered. They don't have vaccinations, and they have health concerns going on. So that puts a burden on the shelters that are taking them in, because the other problem is we're not seeing donations like we were before. So people are not giving monetary donations in the same way they were. And so the problem is you're taking in animals that are sick, and then you don't have the funding to be able to care for them properly. So it's creating an issue all throughout the state, you know, just from talking to other shelters and rescues.
That being said, we do hear kind of quietly how great so many veterinary offices are in terms of working with their community animal shelters. Are you blessed with a pretty good network of veterinarians and other animal care professionals who are, you know, helping you address, at least in the cases of the pets and animals that come into the Cosgrove shelter, in the worst health situations? Are you getting the help that you need for the worst cases?
We are. It's just that the cost, and you can't necessarily blame the vets, because if their costs are all rising, they have to be able to pass that on to somebody. And so the vets that we use are just amazing. I mean, they're just nice people, and they do as much as they possibly can, even by taking animals home themselves and trying to nurse them back to health. But, you know, the animals that we see coming in are, if just they need to be spayed or neutered, it can cost anywhere from $750 to $2,000. And then if they have a health issue, those costs are usually around $2,500 to $5,000 on the low end. Mm. And so it's just extremely cost prohibitive right now to be able to care for all the creatures that need what they need, which is making it difficult throughout the state. And, you know, like I said, as I'm talking to others, they're finding the same issues.
Yeah. And also in terms of your supplies, just to kind of keep things going on a day-to-day basis, it's one thing to buy, you know, dog food and cat food in the kind of bulk situation where you can enjoy some economy of scale. But your shelter is a little bit more unique in that you don't just take dogs and cats, right?
Right. Yeah. We take in pretty much anything that's domesticated that needs help. With this new building, we've actually built a barn as well that's fully fenced in. And so, you know, we've always been known to take in your random sheep or pig or whatever needs help. We've always had chickens and ducks. But we take in critters, too. So we could have bunnies, guinea pigs, rats, hamsters, parrots, you name it. You know, we try not to turn away anybody, you know, that really needs us to take in their animal, so the animal doesn't end up abandoned outside.
Mm. Well, since part of your mission is not only to care for the animals, it's to educate not only pet owners, but aspiring pet owners. And we've seen cases in the news just over the past probably 20 or 30 days, you know, a python or a boa constrictor, you know, in a police car. We saw that tiny little monkey that got mm-hmm. rescued from somebody's garage. Before we talk about the best possible relationship synergy between people and the more conventional kind of pets, let's talk about exotics, because, you know, bright, shiny objects have always been attractive to people, especially those who are equipped to own them or at least to purchase them. What do you have to say to folks in terms of some of the more, you know, frequently acquired exotic species that either your shelter is seeing or that you're hearing about proliferating across, you know, our region?
Well, I think there's a few things with that, too. I think that, first of all, if you're going to be purchasing an animal online, you need to make sure that it's legal to own that animal in the state of Connecticut, and that if it is legal, that you're getting the proper permits to house that animal at your house or facility. And I think, too, you have to think about the quality of life for that animal, too, because, you know, just that monkey alone, they're not meant. There's a reason why we don't see monkeys, you know, around trees in Connecticut. And so you have to think about the habitat that they naturally live in and what you're going to be able to provide for them on your own. And so we really discourage people from purchasing animals online. We don't actually believe in shipping animals, live animals, through the mail anyways. We just think it's sort of an inhumane way to operate. Mm. But I know a lot of people do that, and they really just have to, I think, educate themselves on what's allowable in the state, and then how, if it is allowable, how they're going to accommodate that animal, especially as it grows and the needs of the animal, you know, rise maybe past a level than the person realizes they're capable of.
Mm-hmm. So in regards to the types of the more common types of exotic or unusual animal pets that you're seeing that are being turned in just because, you know, for one of the myriad reasons, they got to go back to work. They never thought the animal would act this way or eat this much or poop that much. I mean, yep. It's not funny, but it's got to be very concerning for folks in your line of work.
Yeah, I mean, what we're seeing an uptick on with people, which is a little unusual compared to what we've seen in the past, is people are going to, whether they're backyard breeders or pet stores, and they're purchasing animals, and then within a week or two, they're contacting us to give it up. And it's because they don't want the responsibility. They didn't realize the animal was going to need to be walked or poops in the house, those types of things. And we didn't really see an uptick of that before. So that's something new for us. And then, of course, the little creatures like ferrets. We've gotten a lot of bird calls. So people who have, whether parrots or they have parakeets that they want to get rid of. It's a lot of people who did seem to adopt either during COVID or right after COVID and no longer want the responsibility, or they say they're moving or having a new baby. And so, you know, I think people are, you know, getting kind of tired of the responsibility of having to care for the animal. So they're just looking to figure out where they can get rid of it.
Well, you know, certainly you can't unring that bell once they take possession of the animal. So, you know, what is the normal course of, you know, what is the normal course of care once that animal comes into the shelter? Are you in a position to vet and qualify adopting owners or fostering owners who have that knowledge and that skill set and the environment to be able to, you know, at least successfully sustain the life of that animal?
Yeah, we do. It's just a much longer process than it used to be. So in the past, I can use dogs, for example. We had a 4 to 7 business day length of stay. So that would mean that once the animal was in, we would start working on rehabilitating and understanding the animal's needs and getting them, you know, vetted medically and making sure they're spayed, neutered, and whatever else. And then from that point, once they were fully done, it was 4 to 7 business days to get them back into a loving home. And that's nowhere near where we are now. We're seeing after the animals are fully vetted and we start to rehab them, it's 6 to 8 weeks at minimum that we're finding them get back into a new home. And sometimes much longer, just because people are not actively looking the way they were before for animals. You know, the uptick right now is really looking to get rid of their animals. So it's just a process. It's definitely a longer process than it was before.
Yeah, and that creates a, you know, a log jam on the intake of new animals coming in. And it certainly is a massive multiplier in terms of the cost of your operation to be able to keep these animals in a no-kill situation. Right. Which brings us to why this great event you guys have coming up is so important, the Dog Days of Summer Music and Food Truck Fest. Now, this is a successful and familiar event you guys have been hosting for in some capacity for a while now, right?
Yeah, so this is actually a little different than the event we've always done. Our typical event that we did was Woofstock on the Branford Green, and we've held that, I want to say, a little over 10 years. Yeah. But we wanted to try something different, just because on the Branford Green, as fun as it is, they don't allow beer and wine, and to situate a bunch of food trucks is a little difficult just because, you know, the roads have to be open to the public.
Sure.
And so here at the Nuzzo's Farm, pretty much right across the street from the animal shelter in Branford, we can host a food truck festival, and they can have beer and wine for sale there. And people can kind of sit and stay for 3 or 4 hours very comfortably and listen to music and try the different foods that are there. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And Nuzzo's is sort of very similar to how we operate, in the sense that they have rescue animals all over their farm. So they've been sort of a partner with us for a long time. When we get ducks and geese and other animals that need help, mm-hmm. they will assist by taking them into their farm. And they also, you know, rehab and will keep them or find them homes, too. Okay. So it really kind of goes hand in hand with what we do.
Great. Well, for folks that may be listening out on Long Island or way down in Fairfield County or up in northern New Haven County, we want to bring them out to Nuzzo's Farm for the Dog Days of Summer Music and Food Truck Fest. What other things are going to be offered and available? Tell us a little bit more about the event.
Yeah, so we have three bands that are going to be there: Misbehavin', Steamroller, and Travis Moody Band. We will also have our t-shirts, hats, and sweatshirts for sale there. And it's just going to be a lot of fun. I mean, it'll be kind of an event where you can bring a lawn chair or a blanket and hang out with your family and just have a great day and be in beautiful Branford. So it's just going to be so much fun to hang out and see everybody.
So live music, food trucks, including adult beverages. How about, yes. Are you encouraging, welcoming, or restricting people from bringing their own pets along with them?
Yeah, we're not going to have dogs come to this event just because they have so many rescue farm animals there. Mm. So they have everything from goats to sheep to chickens and, like I said, ducks and geese.
Right.
So it's sometimes scary for those guys to have different dogs running around. So this event is going to be a little different than our Woofstock on the Branford Green. It'll just be, you know, unique in the sense that, like I said, we can have as many food trucks and bands playing mm-hmm. For as long as we'd like, and people can come and hang out and have a glass of wine and just hang out for the day.
Yeah, and the income, as we heard in our prior conversation, is so desperately needed. Along with other support, we've got about a minute left, Laura, if you could just remind people, if they can't write a check because they're in a financial situation but they want to help, tell us about volunteer opportunities at the Dan Cosgrove Animal Shelter.
Yeah, so we're going to actually be opening up in the fall our full volunteer program back to the general public. We were a little on hold in the beginning just because Branford residents really wanted to get back in here, so we were opening it up only to them. But in the fall, starting in September, people who follow us on Facebook will see the link up on our Facebook page, and they can just sign up right through the link and become a part of our volunteer program. And you can do many things with the volunteer program. You can help to clean in the shelter or socialize animals. There's a program called Tails to Trails, which is walking dogs off-site. We have people that specifically want to work with our critters, and we do have a program for that. And then we also have a volunteer program for people who just want to help with events and things and fundraisers and stuff. So people can participate in many different ways. And starting in September, they'll be able to see the link on our Facebook page.
Great. And remind people where they go to find you virtually online on social, or if they want to come in and visit the place, maybe to consider adopting or to consider being part of your team.
Sure. Yeah. So we're on Facebook under Dan Cosgrove Animal Shelter and on Instagram as well. And we're under Cosgrove Animals on TikTok. And we're located at 749 East Main Street in Brantford. And our building sits back a little bit from the road, but our sign is out there. And if people want to donate or want to see what animals are available, they can go to BrantfordAnimalShelter.org, and they can also purchase tickets there for our upcoming Dog Day of Summer event.
Very good. From guinea pigs to chinchillas, rabbits, of course, dogs, puppies, cats, and kittens, the Dan Cosgrove Animal Shelter has it all. Of course, they take other animals as well, thanks to the ability for their partners, including Nozo's Farm, to help them out. Laura Salvaggio Bourbon is their director and has been a guest with us on a number of occasions. And Laura, great to hear about all the great work you're doing. Fantastic information on the exotics issues, and we appreciate it. Thank you so much, and good luck with your event. Well, Nora, I know that some listeners are probably going AARP again, but you know, you guys are happening over there at AARP Connecticut, so there's a lot going on to talk about. And this time, while AARP is the delivery vehicle, we're going to really be talking about how community members either are going to be able to get on board with an AARP collaboration in terms of an upcoming round of grants that just opened up, as well as reviewing how a number of Connecticut communities are going to be benefiting from a different series of grants. We just want to remind folks that AARP Connecticut empowers people to choose how they live as they age. There's more than 100 million Americans age 50 and older, and people want their money, health, and happiness to last as long as they do. So AARP wants to be a wise friend and a fierce defender, focusing on the priorities of older Americans and really all Americans, right, Nora? Because AARP isn't just for folks over 50.
Yes, and thanks for having me back, and I hope people don't get tired of hearing from me. We are, you know, primarily an organization that advocates and serves people age 50 plus, but the fact of the matter is, we really, what we do for one, we do for all. So you're absolutely right. And, you know, the community challenge grants and the livable community grants and much of our advocacy work and a lot of our education and outreach really benefits people of all ages. So, because you're not going to have that money to hang on to and live your best life when you're, you know, 60, if you don't start well before that.
Very true. And while people these days, as we're taping this here at the beginning of July, are kind of looking toward November, many with trepidation as to what the heck they're going to do in the voting booth, a lot of folks are kind of, their thoughts are currently dominated maybe at the national level because so much is happening, but there's a lot of important elections happening in Connecticut this November as well. And AARP and AARP Connecticut is really helping lead the charge in terms of voter education. Why don't we kick it off talking a little bit about how AARP can help anybody get a little bit better understanding of their civic duties and responsibilities in terms of their voting practices?
For sure. Yeah. So I was just in Washington, D.C., doing a lobby day with all of my colleagues from around the country on issues important to people age 50 plus, voters age 50 plus, voters of all ages, family caregivers. There's a lot coming up for November and a lot of preparation. So let me start with the basics. AARP across the country, but let me focus about here in Connecticut, takes very seriously our obligation to give the facts about voting in your community. So AARP.org/CTVotes. And you can find that a million ways. You could probably just Google it for anybody who's living in any state to get the facts there. But what we want to provide you with is the, you know, when to vote, where to vote, how to vote, so that you go vote. And there are a lot of changes in Connecticut this year. So in-person early voting is hitting us for the first time in 2024. So, I mean, that's never happened here before. It puts us in line with the vast majority of the rest of the country. But you don't have to wait until election day to vote in 2024 and moving forward. So you'll find the rules about early in-person voting updating and keeping that accurate and ready for you anytime. And that's because of a ballot initiative that Connecticut voters overwhelmingly supported 2 years ago that allowed the General Assembly to change the Constitution so that we can vote early in person. But the thing about it is there's another ballot question this year, and that's about no excuse absentee balloting. So it's a very similar vein where we have to say as voters, we do or do not want the General Assembly to move forward with changes to the Constitution to allow for no excuse absentee balloting. And I got to tell you, 95% of people I talk to don't know that ballot question is coming. So I've got a big job to do there.
Well, why don't you, continue in your advocacy by explaining a couple of the most important things that people should know about this potential constitutional change?
Yeah. So everybody who votes, whether you vote early, whether you vote, have a legal excuse to vote absentee now, everyone is going to be asked a simple question about whether they want to see the Constitution changed for us to do no excuse absentee balloting. I think people got a lot more familiar with absentee balloting during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot to learn about how that process works. We've got that on our site. We will be speaking to the Secretary of the State in a variety of different forums moving forward for the rest of the year that we'll share on our social media platforms. So that people can understand what that really means. But the fact is that, you know, Connecticut, again, remains one of the few outliers on requiring there to be an excuse to vote absentee, where anybody who watches election coverage knows that many, 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 many people around the country are voting absentee and early. So we're just trying to get Connecticut aligned with the vast majority of the rest of the nation. And, you know, the people will make up their minds when they go to the polls this year. But, you know, trying to keep to the facts, stay away from the misinformation campaigns that often go on anywhere we look.
Sure, sure.
Especially on social media and things that pop on our phone.
Yeah. So in a nutshell, the difference, if this constitutional measure is endorsed by the voters in November, it'll just mean that they will not have to certify by signature that they are a member of the armed services, working at a polling place, infirm or unable to get to the polls for whatever reason that day.
Correct. You can vote. If you're saying, I want to vote absentee, you would just be able to do it because you wanted to do it, not because you meet a certain category of voter. Exactly correct, John.
So essentially, you would apply for your absentee ballot to your registrar. You would receive the absentee ballot in the mail, complete it as you see fit, seal it in the necessary sequence of envelopes, and then simply drop it in the exterior drop box at your convenience. The difference between that and early voting is early voting still has guardrails in terms of its hours and dates of the period during which early voting happens, right?
You have synopsized that very well. There are other ways to get your absentee ballot in. You can use the U.S. mail. You can walk into the registrar or voter's office. But yes, there are going to be hours and different days of the week for early voting. It's not like you're going to be able to say, I think I want to vote, on Tuesday at 3 a.m. and someone's going to be there to accept you
sure.
coming in to vote in person.
Right.
So, So yeah, I mean, your synopsis was spot on. And yeah, you use all the same protocols we use for making sure that an absentee ballot is accurate and counted properly now. It would just mean you don't have to, be a member of the armed services, be out of state, et cetera.
Yeah, religious exemption, what have you. Yeah, good, good, very good. Nora Duncan's with us. She's with AARP Connecticut. She has been a frequent guest here, as has AARP, but as we continue to reiterate, it's more because AARP has so much to offer, not just to folks 50 and over, but to all folks, as you're hearing from our conversation this morning, and you'll continue to hear for the next 10 or 12 minutes as we talk about how AARP is giving back to our communities, both in terms of the 2024 Livable Communities Grant Program, which whose application period is just opened and closes August 16th, by the way. So if you are thinking about doing a community project, August 16th is your deadline. But we also are thrilled to be able to quickly encapsulate descriptors of a number of Connecticut organizations that were awarded through the nationwide AARP program to make communities more livable as well. So we'll tell you more about that before we do. We just want to remind you that you can join the International Free and Accepted Modern Masons and the Order of the Eastern Star and Connecticut Grand Joint Council Department for their second annual book bag giveaway community event on August 3rd at 11 a.m. It's happening at the Dixwell Community Q House right in New Haven. You can enjoy a fun-filled day of games along with a book bag and bicycle giveaway. Light refreshments are going to be served, and if you want to learn more, you just go over to Facebook and visit at Connecticut Grand Joint Council, or just show up on August 3rd at the Dixwell Community Q House for this great event. All right. Turning our attention now to the way that AARP gives back. So Nora, the seven awards that we're going to be talking about are the fruit of the application process for the program that just opened up for next year for the Livable Communities Grant, or are these separate grant initiatives?
It's separate, and usually we have a few more months separating these programs, so it's not as confusing. But we've got two things going on.
All right. Well, let's talk about the application process, because that won't take very long.
Okay. So right now, the AARP Connecticut 2024 Livable Communities Program application process is open, closing on August 16th, as you said. So this is an opportunity for municipalities and nonprofit organizations to apply for up to $5,000 for livable community programming projects, et cetera, that follow our eight domains of livability. And I'll simplify that by saying, if it's good for a stroller and it's good for a wheelchair and it's good for someone on foot, it's good for everybody. If it's good for an 8-year-old and an 80-year-old, it's good for everybody. You know, we're really looking at impacting the lives of the 50 plus and their families and their communities. And you can learn all about that on our website. Again, municipalities and nonprofits, aarp.org/CT, and get those grant applications into us so that we can really fund some creative and amazing programs throughout the state.
Yeah, and I must say, it's not a problem to just quickly zip through those eight domains by title, but I did want to focus on one of them. So outdoor spaces and buildings, transportation, housing, social participation, work and civic engagement, communication and information, and community and health services are seven of them, the eighth being respect and social inclusion. Can you talk more about that one?
Yeah, you know, respect and social inclusion is really a lot about making sure that we're helping to facilitate communities where everybody has a place and a voice. And to me, you know, we can think about that in a lot of ways. A lot of times people go to sort of the diversity, equity, and inclusion lens on this, and I fully agree with that. But what I also want to make sure that people think about is other aspects of respect and inclusion. So this really means, like, you know, respect for people's ages and the experiences they bring to the table from life experience. So what does it mean if
honoring our elders,
you know, including our sometimes the one thing we all really have in common, which is getting older, right? But bringing all different voices into one room. So that one is probably, in some ways, leaves the most opportunity for creativity, I think, too, which is exciting.
Yeah.
And folks, you know, what does that mean to you? You know, we have a right across the parking lot for me is a senior leaning low income apartment building with a daycare center on its first floor next to a church across from the state capitol. I think about all the kind of things that I just said in one sentence that you could develop a project for respect and social inclusion right there. And I don't know, I think this is probably the one that we get the least amount of applications on. So I'm glad you brought it up, and I would look forward to seeing what people come up with on that.
Great. When we talked to you about gearing up for grant applications, we talk about how well Connecticut does on this nationwide program to make communities more livable. And man, kind of hit the jackpot this year with 7 of them, right?
I was like, 7. That's the most we've ever gotten. So clearly the quality of Connecticut's applications are on the rise. So I'm really excited.
Right.
Nearly $57,000, John, in grants to Connecticut from our national program this year.
Fantastic. Well, we may only have time to talk in a tiny bit of length with the ones in our area. So let's start with 2, not 1, but 2 to Fairfield.
Yeah, 2 to Fairfield itself, $20,000 to the Connecticut Audubon Society for them to build a ramp, a raised area where people can safely access the Birds of Prey compound if they have mobility or physical issues.
Oh, okay.
So everybody is going to be able to get to use this platform to get into the Birds of Prey compound at the Connecticut Audubon Society. Mm-hmm. And what's better than that? I'm a big birdie, so I'm psyched about that one. And by the way, I don't vote on these, so it just happens that I'm excited about it. And then almost $6,000 to the Fairfield Museum and History Center. And their goal is to make their exhibits more accessible by adding closed captioning in video, providing audio headsets and Spanish language translation, as well as large print labels on their exhibits so that people, you know, people with hearing issues, people with vision issues, people who don't speak English well or don't speak English at all or just prefer to use Spanish as their first language can enjoy these same exhibits that everybody else gets to.
Yes, yes. And kudos to Torrington Police Department for skating to where the puck is going to be when it comes to safe streets and pedestrian safety, right?
Yeah, this one I was excited about. Torrington Police Department knew they had a problem with a major intersection being safe for pedestrians and bicyclists, and they applied and won close to $14,000 to provide outdated non-compliant crosswalk with more visible and ADA compliant access. So they will be able to match that with some other funds that they got and get this thing moving so that this access to their downtown area for older adults, for people with mobility issues, for just anybody who wants to safely cross the street so that they can do that. I thought that was really, I had not seen a police department apply before.
Right.
So I was excited about them identifying a problem in their community and then figuring out a way to solve it.
Yeah, and I bet you're going to see a lot more of those happening now that sort of that barrier has been broken by municipal police agencies or campus police agencies. Hopefully, we'll see more of those. Now, just as the Fairfield Museum and History Center, in part, is going to apply their grant for audio headsets, Bethel Public Library is going one better, essentially, if a completely adaptive audio system.
Yeah, so a lot of people go to their libraries for programming, right? So there's a presentation going on, an author's coming in to speak. They're going to use a very small grant, only $1,000. So I don't want, you know, that's a good size one for one of our Connecticut projects.
Sure.
It'll allow hearing impaired individuals to comfortably participate in the presentations in the library's community room. And just a shout out to Bethel. That's their second grant they've won from AARP. This is a national one, and they won a Connecticut one several years ago. So you can win more than once also.
Excellent. Also, congratulations to Ellington. They're going to install a greenhouse at a senior center that's going to grow produce for a local food pantry. Up in Manchester, the Manchester Area Conference of Churches Charities is going to transform 5 parking spaces into a community garden for 6 months a year that will allow folks to grow fruit and vegetables, also for a food pantry and soup kitchen. And out there in Vernon, the town of Vernon Senior Center is going to create a community garden at a senior center as well to grow vegetables and herbs to supply the center's breakfast and lunch programs. So 3 fantastic community garden initiatives for the other 3 to balance out this historical year of 7 Connecticut organizations qualifying for the nationwide AARP program to make communities more livable. But we'll circle back to $5,000 awards that are available to Connecticut organizations and communities. Don't forget, your applications for the Connecticut Livable Communities Grant Program closes on Friday, August 16th. So once again, if you do want to apply for those grants, you need to go to aarp.org/CT. That's right where my partner, Nora Duncan, is from, and she has once again graced our airwaves with all of her great information today. So, Nora, thank you so much, and best of luck to you. Enjoy the summer, and we'll be talking to you again when these new Connecticut community grants are being awarded, and we'll find out who got those, okay?
Yes, thank you so much for the opportunity, John.
Well, it wasn't so long ago, just 6 months or so, that we were chatting with the folks from the New Haven Legal Assistance Association because they were poised to celebrate their 60th anniversary. So we're back now with their deputy director, Elizabeth Rosenthal, to talk about how the 60th celebration's been going so far. We also have some great information if you're looking for legal help anywhere within the sound of our voice. And we want to bring you down to New Haven for their fantastic block party that's coming up in early August. We're going to talk all about that and more with Elizabeth Rosenthal after we remind you of how to get yourself some really, really sweet treats for a good cause. I'm talking about Grahamberries, the delicious organic blueberries available every summer through Ableis. They are back for a limited time, and while supplies last, they are farm fresh organic blueberries sold at multiple locations around Greenwich, Darien, Stamford, and the lower Fairfield County region. They're from a unique partnership with Blueberry Hill, an organic blueberry farm in upstate New York, whose son Graham is an Ableis community member. As you know from their many appearances on the program, Ableis is providing great services and support for folks who are suffering with or are living with disabilities. These Grahamberries are available now through mid-August, once again, while supplies last. And you can find out more about where you can get these blueberries any day of the week by going to their website, ableis.org. That's ABILIS.org. I'm sorry, ABILIS.US. So, Elizabeth, No, probably want to just like run out and get blueberries, huh?
I know. My mouth was watering. I'm going to have to keep my eyes out for those.
Yeah. This is a great cause. And I know that that you have dealt with many clients who are, may have some sort of a disability and who are getting the short end of the stick in terms of legal matters. So this organization does great work. And that would be a great partnership. They get the blueberries, you guys eat them. So the New Haven Legal Assistance Association secures justice for and protects the rights of folks in New Haven County who are unable to engage in legal counsel. You also have a great network of other agencies that will tell folks how to learn more about. But first of all, let's flash back to our where our conversation all started back in the beginning of the year. The 60th year celebration has provided so many ways for folks to get to know the organization. Tell us how the celebration's been going so far.
It's been wonderful. We've had a number of more intimate events. We had an event at Bar in New Haven with a chat with some of our former staff members about the past and future of legal services in New Haven County. We had a discussion at the library with some of our current staff attorneys in different practice areas talking about their work. But what we're really excited about is that coming up on August 10th in Goff Street Park from noon to 5 is we're going to be having a community block party to celebrate people in New Haven County. We actually also serve the lower Naugatuck Valley. So if there are people down in the valley who want to come into New Haven for this party, that'd be great because we understand that without this community, we are nothing, and we are part of this community, and we serve this community, and we want to have a party to celebrate that because we wouldn't have been here for the last 60 years if not for the support of both our wonderful clients and our supporters throughout New Haven County.
Well, there are so many, virtually countless situations where people may find themselves saying, man, I probably really need a lawyer to take a look at this or to advocate on my behalf or to provide me with some support. And inevitably, many of the answers are, well, you know, why don't you start at Legal Aid? But mm-hmm. there are a lot of things that Legal Aid as a movement can and can't do for people. So let's go back and remind people exactly what New Haven, your organization, the New Haven Legal Assistance Association, actually does.
Sure. We provide individual legal services for low-income people in New Haven County and the lower Naugatuck Valley. We serve clients who are at or below 125% of the federal poverty line. And so that generally means, just to give people a little bit of a framework, for a family of four, the poverty line is $31,200. So 125% of that, sometimes there are exceptions. We actually have exceptions for seniors, for example, who don't have to meet those income guidelines. But that's, you know, low-income folks in New Haven County who are facing issues with safety, income support, housing stability. Those are really our bread and butter legal services issues. So we have a family law unit that really focuses on protecting survivors, victims and survivors of domestic violence. We have a housing unit that represents folks facing evictions and with conditions issues in their homes. We have a public benefits unit that helps people access, the safety net for income support. Mm. We also have an immigration unit that helps people, maintain, obtain status to have safe and productive lives in the United States.
Well, let's focus on a couple of those, starting with the immigration unit. Certainly immigration has been out front and in a big way across the country over the past decade or more in terms of its focus and its polarizing of communities and individuals. In terms of your interaction with folks in the immigration unit, what are a couple of the most common or frequent concerns that are bringing people to the New Haven Legal Assistance Association?
Safety, right? Safety and asylum from conditions in their home countries are really the main driver, I would say, of our clients. So we are doing a lot of asylum applications and trying to assist people in, you know, gaining legal status in this country.
So sadly, you and I both hear the critics of the asylum system just saying it's just a box that folks check to fast track their way to get into the country. But you and your team are meeting and working with these people without getting into any detail that might identify an individual client. Can you just kind of relate to people some of the horror stories that you're hearing and why these people are seeking asylum here in our country?
I want to be candid. I personally don't do asylum work, so I am not well versed in any specific client stories that we have right now. But what I will say is that the asylum process is quite rigorous. It's not simply a box you check. To gain asylum status is a very intensive process that requires reports and third party expert testimony and interviews and things like that. And I will certainly say that our clients definitely have stories of personal and political persecution that absolutely qualify them for that status in our country.
Okay. How about in terms of housing? We talk a lot about that here on our program. Just because we're in the middle of this crisis, on any given day, Connecticut needs 13,000 to 15,000 more housing units than it has. And it certainly could create situations where a lot of those units could be more affordable. I'm sure, yep, along with your colleagues in housing and support and crisis response agencies, you guys are seeing, in some respects, the same fallout.
We are. We absolutely are. I mean, I think there are a couple of things going on. First of all, we have a lot of clients who are still, I think, suffering some from the fallout of the pandemic with, you know, income issues, not being fully employed, and things like that, where housing is increasingly unaffordable because the prices of the housing are also increasing exponentially here in Connecticut. We're also seeing a lot of housing sales to new owners where the new owner wants to maybe do some repairs in the units and raise the rents. And so they're evicting people, maybe people who've been living there quite a long time, so that they can do that repair work and in some cases double the rent. So unfortunately, we are actually seeing some circumstances where older people who've been living in a home for quite a long time are finding themselves having to find new housing after, you know, more than 10, 15 years because they have a new landlord, and that's unfortunate. So we spend a lot of time in our housing unit. We have a right to counsel program in certain zip codes in New Haven County, where we're trying to represent everyone we possibly can. Sometimes we do reach capacity, but we're trying to take as many cases as we can to help people maintain housing stability, which doesn't always mean that we can keep them in their current housing, but we're working to connect them with the resources to find new housings where they hopefully don't experience a period of homelessness.
Well, you know, there's nothing like getting to work in the morning and you know, having six or eight time blocks where you have to deal with individuals of varying needs and being able to actually, you know, bring those individuals in, find out what their needs are, and maybe initiate, if not complete, the fix in a relatively short period of time, or possibly even in that visit. When it comes to your office, what are a couple of the really kind of quick and simple legal initiatives that people are bringing to you that are relatively quick and easy to solve when you have the legal expertise of the members of your team?
Sometimes it's just some good advice. Someone just wants to hear from a lawyer what their next step should be. You know, should I pay the rent? What should I do? How should I communicate this with the landlord? So there are times where there are things that can be resolved through a quick phone call or just giving someone advice about what the next steps are or how to connect, for example, with code enforcement to complain about conditions. Unfortunately, one of the problems we see is that in Connecticut, people have conditions issues and they don't understand the process about there's a legal process to resolve conditions issues where they're not supposed to withhold their rent. They can't just stop paying their rent. They have to call code enforcement. If code enforcement comes out, you know, even if code enforcement doesn't come out, but if code enforcement comes out and issues orders to the landlord, they can file what's called a housing code enforcement action where they escrow rent to the court. And it's an incredibly complicated process. I'm not saying it's easy, but it is a process that people are supposed to follow. So someone who can come to us at the beginning of that, where we can advise them on that process, assist them on that process before they've, say, withheld rent and ended up in eviction court for nonpayment. Those are the kinds of things that we can resolve pretty easily.
And outside the housing arena and into all of the other things that NHLA does, do you guys assist people who qualify for your help with things as simple as like wills and you know, quick hit legal transactions like that?
Currently, that is not part of our practice. We are engaging in strategic planning and potential needs assessment, but currently wills and estates and that kind of planning has not been part of our practice.
Okay.
We've found the need with, you know, things like family law and housing and public benefits have been so great that we've focused on, and I actually forgot to mention, we also do education law where we help, you know, students in school who might need, you know, with learning disabilities, who might need special accommodations at school or who are being expelled from school for disciplinary issues. We also do that as well. So we found the needs in those areas to be so great that we haven't expanded beyond them.
The other thing that we wanted to talk about in the last couple of minutes that we have with you, Elizabeth, is the fact that NHLAA is not a standalone agency in terms of the type of assistance that it can supply. You actually have a network of similar agencies that you folks are part of that has compiled a really robust and informational website. Let's talk about CT Law Help.
Yes, I would love to. So we are part of a network that covers all legal services statewide. So we cover New Haven County and the Lower Naugatuck Valley. There's an organization called Greater Hartford Legal Aid that covers the Hartford area, Connecticut Legal Services, which covers pretty much the remainder of the state, including, you know, much of Fairfield County or all of Fairfield County. And we all work together to maintain a website called ctlawhelp.org, which contains a wealth of legal information for folks. So, you know, if someone just has a quick question about, as I discussed earlier, you know, conditions, you know, my landlord won't make repairs in my apartment, they can go to that website and they can get a whole pamphlet. They can get a whole page of information about what the process is and what they should be doing and what they shouldn't be doing. And also has information about how to connect with legal services if they need it.
Excellent. And in closing, for folks who want to support the work that you're doing, aside from coming out on August 10th to the block party and meeting you and some of your team and perhaps a lot of the folks that you've already touched with assistance, how can folks help the cause and help you do more for more people?
Well, thank you for that. I did want to, I want to say, I think the block party is going to be really fun. I think, you know, there's going to be music, there's going to be food, there's going to be games. We're looking into, you know, bounce house, things like that. So I think that's a great opportunity to come out and support us in that way. But I would also direct people to our website, nhlegal.org, which is also a place to get more information about our services and what we do. I would encourage people to sign up for our newsletter, which you can do on the at the bottom of the front page of our website. And there's also a donate button there. If people are so moved, we are always welcoming individual donations to support our work.
Fantastic. We really appreciate the information this morning. Our guest, Elizabeth Rosenthal, is the Deputy Director of the New Haven Legal Assistance Association, providing legal advice, brief service, and full representation to ill individuals, strategically prioritizing legal work for qualified folks that'll make systemic improvements to benefit large numbers of low-income people. And they also work in engaging in community education and outreach like this very program. So mission accomplished, Elizabeth. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And continued congratulations on your 60th anniversary celebration. And hopefully we'll see you at the block party.
Yeah, we'll see you there.
Take care. Thanks.
Thank you.
Take care. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA for our program that's relevant to the audiences and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program can be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station websites. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs John Vocat. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime. Just find it under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
Pro Savings Days are back at Lowe's. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.